So welcome back, everybody, to the Monday Empower Hour of Holistic Actions, where this month we're talking about how to walk the path to pet wellness. Last month we talked about getting the best of both worlds using the framework to get to optimal balance, but now we need to figure out the practical things that we need to do that will let us walk that path. And Dr. Christina will introduce our esteemed presenter for tonight.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled to have Doug Neven here. He's amazing. He has been had a wonderful holistic practice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that I sent many a person to, and just a very loving practice for everybody, the staff as well as clients and animals, and very, very active and helpful with the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association in multiple different roles. So I thank you for that work. And he's now working with ARE and Edgar Cayce and doing Edgar Cayce's work. So he's working with volunteers and has been doing that and was on the board. So he's doing wonderful things and he's the perfect person to be talking this month. So we're looking forward to it. We're going to start with Dr. Jean is going to do our meditation to begin for us.
Hi, kids, boys and girls, everybody. It's Monday night and there's no more football. So it's but my Seahawks won, so I'm all good. So it's time to take a moment to anchor ourselves in the here and now. So we're going to do a couple of breaths, and it's important to breathe through your nose. So if you need a little sniffle or a real quick little blow so you can move the air, you have a few seconds here, but this is our moment of awareness. Just be here now. Let the day go. There's nothing else you need to be doing right this second. Now it is time to relax so that our prefrontal cortex, cortices, all of our cortices, are in a state to learn. So, as usual, starting at the top of the head, allow that soft ripple of relaxation to flow on down, releasing any muscle tension that you encounter. Lately, I've been rereading James Nestor's book, Breath, which is really fascinating. If you haven't read it, get it from the library or something. And he talks about the ideal breath as about 5 seconds. And my teacher uses a four-sided breath that is a slow count in, a pause at the top, and a slow count out with a little pause at the bottom. So I'm going to try and do that in about a 5 second circuit. So let's try. And we want to breathe shallow. And it's interesting because everybody says, take a deep breath. Well, that is actually not correct. It's more, you get more oxygen if you take a shallow breath and don't just blow out all your CO2. That is like actual science. And the more shallowly you can breathe, is that a word? The more CO2 you retain and the more oxygen can actually glom onto your red blood cells. So let's take a slow, shallow breath in through your nose. One, two, three, four, pause. We're not diving for pearls, just a shallow breath is fine. Breathe out. Don't forget to breathe out, Jean. One, two, three, four. Pause. In, two, three, four, pause. Out, two, three, four, pause. One more. In, two, three, four, pause. Out, two, three, four, pause. Perfect. Well done. Now feel into your body. Is it warm, cool, comfortable, achy? I went for a hike this morning. I'm sore. Okay. But it's all okay. Just notice whatever is there. Now feel the surface that you're sitting or lying on. Feel how firm it is or soft. Feel the way your clothes feel against your body. Feel especially into your hands and your feet. Feel into your feet so you're completely in your body. This will ground and center you. Now concentrate on your hands. Feel them getting warmer. Just feel that warmth flow into them. Or pretend that you can feel warmth flowing into them. Maybe your fingertips will tingle, or maybe you can even feel a little pulse in the ends of your fingers. Feeling this warmth stimulates the parasympathetic system and triggers a relaxation response in the whole body. This is a great way to stop the fight, flight, freeze reaction on the spot. When you imagine warmth, the brain interprets it as safety and homeostasis. Can you feel it? Now let's take one more soft belly breath. In, two, three, four, pause. Out, two, three, four, pause. And enjoy a wonderful hour together with our dear friend and extraordinary special guest. Take it away, Doug.
And before you do, Dog Jean, would you just give us that 1 minute explanation of why we do that?
Oh, because it puts us in the parasympathetic state, which allows us to learn, and it takes us out of that sympathetic wow state. And it's really, really good for your body and for your brain.
Thank you.
Am I
Doug,
on?
you're
All right.
on. All right.
Good evening, everyone. I am so happy to be here to be able to share with you. And let me get my screen going here. There we go. Aha. So my name is Dr. Doug Knieven, and I am a holistic veterinarian, but I wasn't born that way. I actually went to Ohio State University and I graduated in 1987. Whew, that was a long time ago. And I got out of school and I had my syringes in one hand and the pills in the other hand, and I was going to go out there and cure those animals. And then I ran smack into something. And I don't know, maybe some of you have experienced this too, where you go to school and everything's black and white, and then you get to the real world and everything is shades of gray. I mean, sometimes it feels like there could be as many as 50 shades of gray. I don't know, just off the top of my head. And I realized pretty early on that things didn't always go the way the book said they were supposed to go. There were some animals that gave them medication and they were supposed to get better, but instead they had side effects. And then there were other animals where, according to the textbook, this animal's supposed to be dead, and somehow it miraculously came back. And I quickly realized that there had to be more to health and healing than what I learned about in veterinary school. And that sent me on my journey into holistic medicine. And I started off with acupuncture. And so I learned to do acupuncture on animals. I started sticking needles in my patients, and amazing things started happening. And then I started to attract these weird people to my office. And some of them came in with this little vial of sugar pills and said, "Dr. Doug, how are we supposed to use this homeopathic remedy?" And I was like, "I don't know. They didn't teach me anything about that in vet school, and they didn't even say anything about that in acupuncture school." So I took Dr. Richard Pitcairn's course in homeopathy for animals. And then because I was doing acupuncture, I realized I had to learn about Chinese herbs. So I got certified to do Chinese herbal medicine. And then with acupuncture, I found I was working on a lot of dogs with back problems and cats. So I got certified to do chiropractic. And all through this, I didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I realized that there is value in Western medicine. There's sometimes where you need something strong like that. But I felt like I had more tools in my toolbox. And I just wanted to explain this picture. That little guy there on the left is me. And our dog Wendy had puppies. And this is when I learned that animals are a great way to meet cute chicks. And so that was my first girlfriend there, Betsy Bloom. And I still kind of remember that, or maybe I just remember the picture now. But what we want to talk about this evening is the whole idea of the spirit of holistic medicine and how that human animal bond is so important for our health, but also the health of our pets. For me, one of my spiritual kind of guides is a gentleman named Edgar Cayce. And I'll just ask people to put in the chat if you've ever heard of Edgar Cayce before. And then as you're answering, let me just move on to the next slide and we'll talk a little bit about Edgar Cayce. So he lived in the late 18, early 1900s, and he was born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And he was a weird little boy. He actually was present when his grandfather passed away. And after that, he could actually see and speak to his grandfather, his deceased grandfather. And also, when he was playing outside, he had little invisible friends. Nobody else could see him, but he could. Here's another weird thing. Early on, I think he was like 8 or 9 years old, he decided that he wanted to read the Bible cover to cover for every year of his life. And so he actually started off reading the Bible a couple of times a year to catch up for the years that he couldn't read. And by the end of his life, he had read the Bible, Old and New Testament, once all the way through for every year of his life. So he was a very religious man. When he was a child, he had an angelic vision, and the angel asked him, "What is it that you want to do, Edgar?" And he said, "I want to be of help to people and especially children." And the angel said, "You will be granted your wish." He found in grade school that he could actually sleep on a book and know its contents, like what page a picture was on, he could describe it and so forth. When he was 15 years old, he in the schoolyard, he got hit in the back of the head with a ball. And then he started acting very strangely. He was very like wild and just not himself at all. And when he finally made his way home, he was still acting weird. And his parents kind of put him to bed. And as he was falling asleep, he spoke out loud what to do for him. He said, "Make a poultice out of, some different ingredients and put it on the back of my head." And his parents figured, well, we don't know what else to do. So they made this poultice, put it on the back of his head. And when he woke up, he was back to normal. So he seemed to have diagnosed and cured himself when he was just 15 years old. And then when he was in his mid-20s, he lost his voice. And this was a time when hypnotists were going from town to town and kind of doing their little show where they would have people stand up and cluck like chickens. And so they got Cayce up in front of this hypnotist. And when he was hypnotized, he could speak normally. But as soon as they woke him up, his voice went back to a whisper. And so they experimented with hypnosis. And finally, they asked him, while he was under hypnosis, what could be done to help him. And he was able to give them directions on what to do for him. And that led to a local doctor figuring out, well, if he can do this for himself, he can probably do this for other people. And so he started using Edgar Cayce in the back room of his office to diagnose and treat people. And he actually wrote up a report for the Boston Medical Society in 1910. And that started some interest in what he was doing. And basically, he started off as a medical intuitive, and eventually people started asking him more spiritual questions. And so that kind of information came through him. And in 1931, he founded the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, which is still there today. So Edgar Cayce did these psychic readings. And basically, he was able to put himself into a trance. And what would typically happen is there would be Edgar Cayce, and he'd be laying on a couch. And this picture is kind of blurry. It came from a newspaper clipping during the time of his life. There would be a conductor. So this man standing over him, who I believe in this picture is actually his father, would give him the suggestion. You will have before you the inquiring mind of so-and-so at such and such location. You will go through their body and give us their condition and tell us what can be done to help. Something to that effect. And then there would also be a stenographer. You can see the woman with her pen there ready to take notes. And so all of these readings were transcribed, and he gave over 14,000 readings that we still have records of today. And over 10,000 different topics were discussed during these readings. Anything from holistic health, ESP, spiritual philosophy, dreams, meditation, prayer, many, many more, as you can imagine. And one thing that's important to remember is that each reading was specific to the individual or group that was getting that reading. So for instance, just like in holistic medicine today, there could be 10 people that came to him with seizures, and they might all get a different type of remedy because they have the same disease. What we call a disease doesn't mean that they have the same underlying problem that caused that disease. And so every reading was very specific. Now, one of the strange things about the readings is that they were numbered. So every individual that got a reading was assigned a number in order to maintain anonymity. And there's always a number followed by a dash and then a second number. That second number is the number of readings that that person got. So for instance, if someone's number was 45 and this was their fifth reading, the number for that reading would be 45-5. Hopefully that makes sense to everyone. Another very strange thing about the readings is that the language can be very difficult to get through. So for one thing, because Edgar Cayce read the King James Version of the Bible so frequently, the language that came through him was basically in King James English. And so there's these and thous and all of that kind of stuff. And then another thing is, a lot of times the sentence structure and syntax was kind of convoluted and difficult to read. And the reason that I think that that was the case is that he was being given this information from another dimension. And then he had to bring it down into the three-dimensional world and then convert it to English. So think about, surely everyone here has had a strange dream. Like in the dream, everything makes sense. Oh yeah, dogs can fly. Yeah, I see that all the time. And then you wake up and it's like, wait a minute, none of that made sense. How could that be? And I think Edgar was kind of confronting the same thing where, you know, in one dimension, things seem to make sense, but then you're trying to convert it into our language, which can be difficult. And Edgar Cayce was very famous during his time. There were lots of articles written about him. Towards the end of his life, a very popular book, There Is a River, was written. It's a biography of Edgar Cayce that was written during his time. So he had some input into the stories that were in that book. So that would be, if you're ever interested in learning more about Edgar, then I've already told you that would be a book that I would recommend starting with. So let's get more into why Edgar Cayce is part of this presentation that I'm doing. Many people consider Edgar Cayce to be the father of holistic medicine in America. And there are several reasons for that. First of all, he had a body, mind, spirit approach to healing. One concept that came through the readings is that he would sometimes ask someone who was coming to him with a problem, well, why do you want to be healed? And it makes them think, and the point was, do you want to get healed so that you can go back and do the same things that you did that got you in this situation in the first place? A lot of times there were mental things that he would recommend, affirmations and so forth. And there were also spiritual things that he would recommend, like prayer and meditation. So he was but there were also physical things that he recommended too, herbal tinctures. He was big into osteopathic manipulation as a way of helping with a lot of problems. So that's one reason he's the father of holistic medicine. Another reason is that the American Holistic Medical Association, which was founded in 1978, three out of five of the founders were ARE members. And in fact, the following year, there was an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association about Edgar Cayce. The article states, the roots of present-day holism probably go back 100 years to the birth of Edgar Cayce in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. By the time he died in 1944, it was actually 1945, Cayce was well recognized as a mystic who entered sleep trances and dictated a philosophy of life and healing called readings. His base was established at Virginia Beach, Virginia, now the headquarters of the Edgar Cayce Foundation. In fact, that's where the ARE is as well. So there's, a lot of reasons that Edgar Cayce is recognized for his starting of this holistic revolution that we are still experiencing today. The underlying Cayce philosophy, first of all, there was no set doctrine. In fact, a lot of the readings said, hey, test this for yourself. That's part of the reason that the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, has research in there, because it was supposed to be personal research. You apply this to your own life. He proposed or espoused a tolerance for all religions and people, any religion that stressed the love of God and humanity. And the underlying essence that came out of him was part Christian and part Eastern. So he talked a lot about Jesus as a master. He commonly talked about the universal Christ consciousness, which really has more to do with the innate spirituality that we all have deep inside us, more so than is linked with Jesus himself. But he also, as the readings went on, he started talking about reincarnation and karma, which, if you can imagine this man who read the Bible all the way through for every year of his life and was born in the Bible Belt of the United States, when the concept of reincarnation came through him, it really threw him for a loop. Another thing I didn't mention was that during his readings, he was unconscious. So he didn't know what he said in a reading until he came out of the trance and then read the transcript of what he had said. So he really struggled with this idea of reincarnation at first, but eventually he came to peace with it. According to the readings, all souls were created simultaneously at the beginning of time. It was basically like a spiritual big bang. And all souls were sparks of the divine. We were meant to be co-creators with the divine. Some of these souls came to the earth plane. And these souls First started just kind of hovering around the earth and watching the animals, and then they got more interested in what was going on, so they would kind of like pop their consciousness into the animal and pop back out, and eventually they got enmeshed into the physical world, and they forgot. We forgot who we really were as sparks of the divine. And so our mission is to basically find our way back, to manifest our spiritual nature, which is our Christ consciousness, according to the Casey readings. And it's really kind of a simple philosophy. You start where you are with what you have at hand, and you move forward step by step. He really didn't see enlightenment as being this, you know, lightning strike moment. It was working day by day, applying the spiritual tenets that, you know, basically love and kindness in your life. Okay, so here's a question for you. I want you to get ready to put this into the chat. Holistic medicine is about treating the person or the animal as a whole, which is spelled W-H-O-L-E. So why is holistic spelled with an H? So go ahead and enter your answers into the chat, and I will tell you it's because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Dump bump. But actually, I've done some work with this, trying to figure this out. And what I found, so whole with a W is an old English word. Whole with an H is actually, it comes from the Greek word holos, which means whole, like whole with an H. And holistic, that word, from what I understand, was coined by a South African politician in the 1920s, and he was speaking about natural systems and how in nature, everything in a certain ecosystem works in concert with each other as a whole. Now, I spoke to the three ARE members who were founders of the Holistic Medical Association that was founded in 1978. Norm Shealy was one of those people, and he was actually the founding president of the Holistic Medical Association. And to a person, these three people told me that the reason they chose holistic with an H for their organization is that they wanted to emphasize the holiness of the healing process. So again, they were emphasizing the spirit of this body, mind, spirit healing that they were talking about. Now, the AHVMA, the veterinary version of this Holistic Medical Association, was founded in 1982. And I spoke to the founder of the AHVMA, Carvel Tickert, before he passed away a couple of years ago. And I said, why did you all choose holistic with an H? And he said, well, by the time, you know, we were forming this organization, holistic with an H was already out there, so we decided to adopt that. So I really think this all goes back to the AHMA, which goes back to Casey. So I'd like to talk a little bit about our connection with our animal companions. And we need to start by recognizing that our animal companions are spiritual beings just like us. And when you think about it, spirit has been kind of equated with breath. It's the non-physical force that enlivens the body. That's where inspiration comes from. And the soul is an individualized expression of the divine, a spark of the divine, as I mentioned previously. Okay, now we're going to get into some Edgar Casey reading excerpts. And I wanted to start by talking about pet reincarnation. Now, Casey, the Casey readings believed in reincarnation, but they did not believe in the transmigration of souls. So humans reincarnate as humans and animals reincarnate as animals, and those two worlds don't mix, according to the philosophy that came through Edgar Cayce. And Edgar never did a reading for an animal, but there were people who asked about their pets, their animal companions, during their reading. So this is from a woman whose number was 268. So she asked the question, where was I formerly associated with the following? And she ratted off a couple of people like her husband, her daughter, things like that. And then she gets to my little dog, Mona. And the answer was the same experience. So just previous to that, she was told about a life in Rome. And so she says, in the Roman? And the answer is the Roman. Was she a dog then? The answer is a lion. Now, this is kind of funny because the little dog Mona was a Pomeranian, teeny tiny little dog with a big mane. You can imagine that this dog had the energy that it thought it was a lion. And so I'm sure that people, when they first heard this, thought that this was some kind of joke that Edgar Cayce was talking about. Now, this woman's husband, she got a reading for her husband. And she asked during this reading, what relation is he to the little dog Mona? That's the other thing I like about this is every time Mona is referred to, it's always the little dog Mona. But so he fought with the body in the Roman experience. What was Mona then? And the answer is the lioness that fought with the entity. So I'm getting this impression that these people were Christians and Mona was a lion and that they met in the arena. At least that's kind of the assumption that I'm coming up with getting to these readings. But wait, someone else asks about Mona. The niece of the owner of Mona also asked about if she had a past life with Mona. And she was told, oh, in what previous lives have I been associated with Aunt 268's little dog Mona? Rome. And then she asks, will Mona always be a dog? And the answer is, that depends on the environment and the surroundings. And then the answer ultimately was no. So again, just some interesting little nuggets here about reincarnation. I'm wondering how many of you feel like you've had an animal that you've known before? That's something you could put in the chat if you'd like. You know, do you feel like maybe you've had a past life with one of your pets? And one final person asks about the little dog Mona. So just when you thought you'd heard everything, the housekeeper asked, what association in the past have I with Mrs. 268's present little dog Mona? We do not find same. Huh, why has little Mona been so attracted to me? The vibratory forces of the high vibrations of each. So this is interesting. To me, one thing this says is that the readings weren't just telling people something they wanted to hear. You know, these people wanted to think they had a past life with this little dog, not this person. But it also says that if you feel especially close to a particular animal, it may be that you had a past life with them, or maybe it's just that you're on the same wavelength. So there's a lot of different ways that we can have this spiritual connection with the animals that come into our lives. I wanted to talk for a few minutes about the inner life of animals. And there's a lot that we could talk about here. I'm just going to bring up a couple of examples. But there is something called the mirror test, where they see if a person or an animal recognizes themselves and in a reflection in a mirror. And if they can see themselves in a mirror, it's a sign that they have self-awareness. Now, I do this with my cat all the time. I carry him around and I take him to the mirror and he just kind of looks the other way. He does not recognize what that is that's in the mirror there. He's not interested in it at all. But elephants, great apes, dolphins, magpies, even some ants have shown that they can recognize themselves in a mirror. In fact, there's this example of Happy the elephant in the Bronx Zoo, who they put a mark on this elephant's face where the only way it could ever see the mark is when it looks in a mirror. And the elephant kept touching this mark, showing that she could see herself in the mirror. And she realized, you know, there was this spot on her body. There is also evidence that animals often act in ways that suggest empathy. So rats will free trapped companions and even do that rather than take food. Primates are seen comforting others in distress. And in dogs, console crying humans, even strangers. How many of you have been consoled by your dog? I guess it'd be easier to ask who hasn't been consoled by their dog or even their cat. I mean, they can sense when we are in distress, and they are the first ones there to help us out when they can. There's also evidence of psychic abilities for animals. Oscar the therapy cat was in a nursing home in Rhode Island, and the nurses and staff quickly realized that if this cat curled up next to a patient, that person was going to pass away within 2 hours. And it was an uncanny effect that this cat had. And I'm sure that some of you saw this in the news years ago. Here's one from 1923. Bobby the Wonder Dog was lost on a road trip when the family was in Indiana. And he walked over 2,800 miles and arrived back home 6 months later in Oregon. Now, they say that this has to do, you know, with his sense of loyalty and sense of direction. But think about what that would take. I mean, this dog did not smell, hopefully he didn't smell his house from 3,000 miles away. I don't think anyone's house smells that bad. And, you know, he probably wasn't following the stars. He probably didn't have a road map to follow the roads. Think of the rivers and things that he would have had to cross and made it back home. To me, this is evidence that there was kind of this psychic connection to his caregivers that drove him to make it all the way back home where he belonged. Oh, here's another one. How many people remember in 2014? This was in the news quite a bit. Hera, the family cat, and you can still find this on YouTube, although some of it's been taken down because it was a little bit too graphic. The family's four-year-old boy was being attacked by a dog. I mean, this dog just came out of nowhere and grabbed the kid by the leg and pulled him off his tricycle. And this cat just ran into the video site and body slammed this dog, which was, you know, at least 5 or 6 or 10 times bigger than the cat, and shot that dog back into its yard. The cat chased after him. And then afterwards, the cat came back and checked on the little boy. So what causes the cat to do that, to risk its own life to help the boy that it grew up with? There are lots of health benefits of animals. So research with children show that when they care for a pet, it improves their sense of self-importance, their social competence, self-esteem, and sense of self. Oops. There's also a reduced risk of asthma and allergic rhinitis when kids are exposed to animals at an early age. It's probably nothing so mystical about that. It really has more to do with just being exposed to different germs and different things like that to get the body used to things instead of responding in an allergic way. But in the classroom, it's been shown that having pets in the classroom can lead to higher social integration. There are fewer aggressive children and greater sensitivity towards the needs and moods of other people. It improves the students' attitudes towards school. It facilitates their learning lessons in responsibility, respect, and empathy. And even a guinea pig can cause these same improvements in children. Just being around animals of just about any kind can help help children respond better. Animal-based therapy during breast cancer therapy shows that it improves the interaction between the therapist and the patient in many ways. And the American Heart Association has stated that owning a pet actually can help prevent cardiovascular disease. Imagine what it takes for the American Heart Association to make a statement like that. In the elderly, dog ownership helps to improve well-being, reduce loneliness and social isolation, and it increases physical activity. You have to get the dog out, take them for a walk. Specifically, the benefits of dog ownership, it can help lower blood pressure, improve lipid profile, can give you a healthier response to stress, and dog owners live longer. What else do you need to know? If you're interested in this kind of research, the Human-Animal Bond Research Institute is the place to find. They have pages and pages of research that I just picked a couple of studies from. So I would invite you to go to their website, habri.org. Now, when you think about health benefits for sharing our lives with animals, it makes no sense at all. I mean, owning an animal is a pain in the butt. And veterinary costs are going through the roof. You have to water them. You have to feed them. You have to take them out for a walk. You have to bathe them. You know, it makes no sense that we would get any kind of benefit from owning an animal. And yet, in the U.S., there are currently more households with pets than there are with children. I don't know how to explain this. Oh, you know what? I wanted to go back and point out that this picture was obviously generated by AI. If you notice, the woman's right arm is coming from under the bed. And if you look at her legs, she appears to have three legs. So, you know, artificial intelligence only gets you so far. But, you know, this whole thing with animals, it seems like we've lost our minds. But somehow in the process, we have found our hearts. And according to the Edgar Cayce readings, for know all power, all influence that is of a creative nature is of the Father God a manifestation. In all the beauties of nature, in the blush of the rose, in the baby's smile, in the song of the bird, in the ripple of the brook, in the wind, in the wave, in all of those influences or forces that bring to his creatures a consciousness of life itself and its awareness and its activity in a material plane. Some of these readings are just poetic. So nature is infused with the creator. However, our modern lifestyle has separated us from this divine expression. I mean, think of the way we live these days. We live in these homes that are climate controlled. We have electric lights so that when the sun goes down, we're still awake. We have, you know, computer screens and phone screens and TVs. And 100 years ago, most of this country was farmland and people went to bed when it got dark and they woke up when the sun came up. And they worked outside, they got dirty. And when's the last time a lot of us have really gotten out and gotten dirty? So my thought is, and this is backed up again by the readings, here's a good one. For life as it manifests, whether in the grass, the rose, the tree, the dog, the cat, the bird, the animal, is a manifestation of that ye worship as God. Now don't let your dog or cat read that reading, because I'm sure they already think that they are gods. But this is kind of the readings backing that up. My thought is, because we've gotten so far away from nature, we benefit from bringing animals in to our homes to help us stay close to nature, the divine, and God. And according to the readings, God is love. So with that idea, I would like to guide us all on a little reverie. And we'll make this kind of brief so we have some time for questions. But if you wouldn't mind just getting your feet flat on the floor, closing your eyes, taking a few long, slow breaths. And as we're getting ready, I want you to bring to mind an animal companion that you've had an especially close relationship with. And I would say that from the perspective of the readings, there is no death. So you could actually bring to mind an animal that's passed away if you felt especially close to them. But maybe that animal is sitting right next to you now or on your lap, which was great also. But as you're breathing out, allow the stress of the day to fall away. And with each inhalation, just breathe in relaxation. So with the exhalation, let the stress fall away. And then breathe in relaxation. Now imagine that your animal companion is with you right now, on your lap, next to you, at your feet, whatever position you have felt most connected with them. Really feel the presence of your animal companion with you now. Feel the warmth of their body. Feel the soft fur. Become aware of your pet's breathing. Feel the chest rise and fall. Really connect with this other living being. And now I want you to bring to mind some special event that the two of you shared. It might be a time that you were out in nature together. It might be a time when this animal comforted you. Some really special experience that the two of you shared. And I want you to replay that in your mind, relive it. Smell the smell, see the sights, hear the sounds, feel the feelings. Really enjoy this experience. And now I want you to become aware of your own heart and feel the compassion you have for this animal companion. Sense this warmth, this love expanding in your chest. And allow this love to continue expanding. And this love is encircling and embracing this other living being. You feel like you both are connected through this bond of love. And now allow this love to continue to expand, filling the room that you're in, filling the building, filling the town, filling this country, filling the hemisphere, filling the earth. feel yourself experience this oneness of love that you share with this creature and with all of creation. And now just melt in this feeling of oneness. And I'll give us a couple of moments of silence to abide in this oneness. And if during the silence you find that your mind has wandered off, just gently bring it back to this feeling of oneness. 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 And now gradually bring yourself back to this time and this space. Feel your feet on the floor, feel your body in the chair or wherever you happen to be sitting or lying. Take another couple of long, slow breaths. Breathe in that breath of life. Wiggle your fingers and toes. And when you're ready, open your eyes. I am going to skip talking about Ricochet. Maybe we'll have to talk about him some other time because I wanted to have a little bit of time for Q&A. But I just wanted to finish up by talking about holistic medicine. So maybe it's about the whole. You know, according to the dictionary, a whole can be defined as an opening. And I can relate to that because when I started off, I had an open mind. I was willing to look at these other ways of treating the body, acupuncture and homeopathy and herbs. And that willingness allowed me to open doors for patients who otherwise were not being helped by Western medicine. And as I treated more of these patients, I actually was able to open the eyes of some of my colleagues who were really more into Western medicine than into holistic medicine. And so embracing the spirit of holistic includes acknowledging the spiritual significance of our animal companions, energy healing, prayer, meditation, affirmations, intention, visualization, animal communication. And so I wanted to kind of put in a plug for the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association and also a plug for Edgar Cayce's ARE. And with that, how the heck did my cat get that spider web all over his face? So I think we have just a couple of minutes for questions. I'm willing to stay as late as anyone wants to or as long as we're able to stay here. But if anyone wants to feed me questions.
That's great. Why don't you stop sharing?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Dr. Doug. So far, no questions in the chat, but anyone raise your hand or just unmute yourself and say, hey. That was lovely. Just wonderful.
Everyone's probably still visiting with their pet in that meditation.
Yeah.
Yes. I wish we could have done that a little bit longer. It's much better if we can do it more slowly, but.
Oh, no, it was great.
You know, you can always do that on your own. You don't need me there to guide you.
Lots of positive thinking. And earlier they were appreciating learning about Edgar Cayce, those who hadn't or who had heard of him and didn't know very much.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So, yeah, no, I think that was lovely. So far, no questions.
Okay.
I'm surprised. We usually have at least a couple of questions that lurk here. Miyoko says that Listen has just climbed up onto her lap.
Ah.
Any practical advice, tips for enhancing the relationship with pets beyond the invitation?
Well, I really feel strongly that meditating with your pet, especially if you can do it with them on your lap or, at least in the same room, I think that's one way of connecting and kind of even doing that exercise that we just did, where you're making this heart connection with your animal companion. So those would be things that I would recommend. Using visualization to in your mind's eye create a deeper bond. I think those things can be helpful.
Yeah.
Wow, and Marley said that she actually was at ARE and saw, and maybe you were there, Doug. She saw Norm Shealy and Carolyn Miss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they used to work together.
And actually, another July asks, how about enhancing the relationship between animals in the household?
Oh,
And before you answer, I want anybody who has that question to listen to Bernie Siegel's webinar that he did, because they had snakes and mice and cats and birds and dogs and cats, and none of them were in cages or separate rooms. They all lived together, and they were just told to not bother each other.
wow.
Yeah.
Well, so that kind of in a meditative state, when you can be at a higher level of reality, that would be a way of being able to possibly reach these animals and try to bring them together. Again, visualization. I don't know that I have any other secret sauce on that one.
Safe Space by Flower Essence that you can get at Jackson Galaxy.
Pheromones, if it's cats,
Pheromones, yep.
dogs too, for that matter.
Yeah, I would think
So
both.
those would be natural things.
And energetic alignment via homeopathy.
There you go.
Yep. And just letting. Just from everybody we've been hearing from recently, it's just really letting each animal get rid of your thinking about how these animals ought to get along and s have a conversation with each one of them. What do you want out of life? I want that little dog to stop bothering me.
What is your
Well,
problem?
and then have a conversation about that. So, really trying to see each as an individual and take away your preconceived notions, I think, is important. And Christine said that a few doses of a homeopathic remedy, thanks, Dr. Jeff, the adult cat is getting along with her kittens that are there.
Nice.
And there's no one right answer, is there? It's just being present and trying something and then something else.
Well, we're all individuals, and what works for one isn't going to work for everyone else. So, yeah, a lot of times it's experimentation, research.
Yep, playing with just joyfully trying something new, joyfully trying another thing, and then another, and then another. So I think our time's up. Thank you so much. Just wonderful. Dr. Jeff.
Doug, that was perfect. Thank you for arriving at when you arrived. Because those indeed are the exact tools that we need to walk the path, and we will kind of wrap our bow around it a little bit next week at the webinar. But of course, I have to mention that everyone's invited tomorrow to the book launch webinar at 1:30, when Sue, who's here, and a few other people are going to be reading about their animals that are in the book. I don't know if there's anyone else here. And then on Saturday at 1:30 also, and please, you're all invited, there's the final book webinar on Valentine's Day about just what Doug finished talking about, the power of love, the power of visualization, the power of bonding with our animals, and how, again, our love is actually an actionable energy that we can use to help heal them. So, Dr. Neven, thank you. Thank you all for coming, and we will, gosh, see you tomorrow.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, Joy.